Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to New Eridu. Today is Saturday, August 21st, 2010, and this is your host, the voice of New Eridu. Thousands of years ago in human history, the city of Eridu was built in what is now southern Iraq. It was built by a civilization known as the Anunnaki, whose advanced technologies and civilization conceived, gave birth to, and nurtured humankind under the leadership of the Anunnaki commander of Earth, known as Enki or Ea. Enki's interest in and love of humankind is well documented in Sumerian literature, and in Eridu, humankind flourished. Had Enki prevailed in Anunnaki politics, and had his plan for his human children been fulfilled, humankind might already have taken its place among the civilized races. That potential still exists where Enki buried it, deep in human DNA. Enki knew that the sovereign, God-conscious human spirit, a miraculous gift of Source, which was his delight, and the greatest fear of many other Anunnaki, cannot be oppressed forever. Where better to express the resurrection and actualization of this potential than in New Eridu? Welcome, everybody. Thank you again for coming to listen to the show, and thank you to those who have been listening in the archives. Got over 1,000 total listens so far, and that's just amazing. It exceeds my expectations. Thank you so much for your interest and for choosing to spend your very valuable time listening to this message that I have to present to you. The first topic that I have today is a little bit of a sensitive one. It arises from a conversation that I had yesterday on Skype. The conversation was in regards to the sensitive topic of money. And we were discussing how difficult some of us are finding it to remain in our corporate jobs and also simultaneously pursue our spiritual paths. Well, I ran into a situation this year where I found myself, the further I was going into the spiritual side of things, the less capable I was becoming of doing the work that I had done for the past 20 years. And it wasn't a matter of competency. I'm not quite sure how to describe what it was. My attention was different somehow. And just, I got so involved in the human side of it that I couldn't do the technical side of it anymore. And the office politics and the corporate America stuff that they pull on you, it just was at the point where I couldn't tolerate it anymore. My system became too irritated with it. And I had kind of seen this coming for a while. So in January, I had started a business, and I was doing a combination of the kind of work that I had been doing for my day job and also integrating into that my spiritual practice. And I thought I could roll on that for a while. And as it turned out, Source had another idea, and he made it where I could completely just couldn't do that work anymore. And he said, you're going to do this other full time. You need to dedicate yourself 100% to working on the spiritual aim. Well, 4 years ago, before all of this started, before I had been contacted by Enki, before I had been aware of very much other than what I'd been able to dig up myself, which, I mean, I wasn't asleep, but I didn't really, I had a basket of things that I knew were wrong, but I didn't know how to deal with them. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what vector to pursue to get my messages out. I had no focus. I had no solutions to offer. I had no idea where I fit in that equation either. And then Enki came along and contacted me again. And things started moving again. I literally had reached a point in my life where I didn't know what I was going to do next. I was continuing to work a job that I hated. I was working killer hours. I was working 12 to 18 hours a day. And the only reason I was doing that was because I had responsibilities. And I was doing my best to meet those responsibilities because I didn't want to become an old person and be a burden on my son or live on the street. Those two things just are not acceptable to me. And I didn't want my husband to have to work again because he had retired and he really had he deserved to retire. It was time for him. And part of our deal was that I was going to take care of him and I was going to take care of the money. Well, that kind of went out the window in a lot of different ways. But the spiritual path thing, I couldn't have anticipated, but I also couldn't deny it. So in April, I had a discussion with him, and I said, look, I can't do this work anymore. He goes, oh, thank God. I didn't think you were ever going to say that. He apparently had realized all along that this was killing me and that I really had to quit and I really had to go do something else. But he hadn't voiced that to me because he could see I still had a lot of drive to fulfill those responsibilities. But I did have that conversation, and we rearranged things, and I quit my job, and I went out entirely on my own. And I'm still kind of piecing things together right now, a little bit of desktop publishing and work on computers and stuff. Whatever walks in the door, basically, I do. But I find myself, even when I'm doing those things, I'm being called back to focus on the spiritual work. So that even the work that I'm doing for other people within my community, people that I care about, people that I'm going to see tomorrow, and I'm going to be able to meet them in the eye and say, yes, I did your job really, really, really well, I'm having difficulty doing their work. It's Source does not want me working for someone else. Source wants me working on this project, wants me dedicating all of my time on this project. And if I try to do otherwise, then I get kind of a prod. The result of that has been that I'm trying to find a way to create an income stream out of the work that I'm doing without hurting other people. And the crux of the conversation that I had yesterday, and the thing that made it the most uncomfortable conversation I've had in a very long time, was an overly generous offer. And while I appreciate such an overly generous offer, and I really cherish the heart that came from, that's not what I'm here for. I'm here to earn my living by delivering quality content, by providing a place for people to come together and talk. I don't ever want to be in the situation where somebody can point a finger and say, you're like that televangelist. The old lady sold all of her possessions and gave them to you, and you just took them. I don't ever want that to happen. The requirement of the purity of my spiritual message is such that I have to balance very carefully my own needs versus not taking too much from anyone. And I'm going to be instituting a policy that will state I will not take more than X amount of money from any one person or any entity in 1 month. And I'm not going to take money from corporations, and I'm not going to take government grants. If it has anything to do with the powers that pretend, even peripherally, I will not take that money. I need to be completely sovereign. This is the way a sovereign human being behaves. They meet their responsibilities. They trust in Source to deliver. They do not act in any method that could be construed as greedy. They allow it to come. They do not force it to come. So as I develop the new Eridu site into the social network that it's intended to become, I am going to put in place a tiered membership program, and that's going to be $1 a month subscription paid through PayPal. I think $1 a month is probably not a barrier to anyone. All of the content on the website that is static content, everything that's written, all of the existing radio shows, all of the existing videos, those will be free access to anyone. It's when you get into the more advanced features like the social networking, the wikis that we're going to build, the educational programs, the enhanced audio and video content, that's going to be subscription-based. And I hope that works for everybody, but I wanted to make it really clear, I really appreciate offers of assistance. However, I'm capping it. Okay? That's all I want to talk about on that. That's an uncomfortable subject, but I needed to cover it one time just because of the power of that conversation yesterday. It really stuck with a couple of people. So I'm not going to talk about it again, hopefully, but unless I win the lottery, in which case we don't have to worry about it anymore. Today's topic is reclaiming power in the now moment. And several incidents have occurred over the past couple of weeks that have really brought it to my attention that one of the greatest obstacles that we face in reclaiming power over our thinking processes is controlling our timelines. And by controlling our timelines, I mean knowing whether or not we are thinking about and operating in a past, present, or future frame of reference. When you're thinking in a past frame of reference, you're thinking about and drawing resources from who you were in the past. If you're thinking about something that happened to you in second grade while you are standing in front of your boss trying to explain something, you're going to come across as a seven-year-old. You're not going to come across as the adult professional that you are now. If you stay in the now moment, when you do that, it's going to look a lot better. But what if you're standing in front of your boss trying to explain something and you're in the future frame of reference where you're sitting there hoping that you're going to be a VP and fearing that you're going to lose your job next week? How inconsistent is that going to make you look when you're trying to deliver that explanation? When you're in the future frame of reference, hope and fear, you got one on either side of you. Hope is whispering in one ear all the things that you hope are going to happen. You might even reasonably expect that those things are going to happen. But there's still hopes because nothing is certain, nothing is set in the, as of yet, since it's still in the future. Fear is on your other shoulder, whispering in the other ear, and it's telling you all of those negative messages. I'm not going to be able to afford that. Nobody's going to like what I'm coming up with. My idea is not going to sell. All those what-ifs. What if I never meet my soulmate? What if my son can't grow up and launch himself successfully in a career because the economy's too bad? All of those things are holding you back. So you've got hope that's dragging you down the yellow brick road to who knows what color of city. Maybe it's the Emerald City if you're lucky. It might be something else entirely. It could go into the dark forest and take the twists and turns. And oh, hope can lead you in some very strange places. And fear is sitting there just dragging you the other direction. So you're getting pulled apart when you're in the future frame of reference. You've got hope and fear. Divide your forces. Let's say you actually hope something is going to happen, and you start thinking about it, you start dwelling on it, you That is the key. If you ever find yourself dwelling on something and it is not in the absolute now moment, kick out of it right then, because manifest it. If you're thinking about some past occurrence and it keeps coming up in your mind and coming up in your mind and coming up in your mind, guess what you're going to manifest? You're going to manifest the exact same thing again in some form or another. That's why people manifest repeating situations in their lives, because they keep focusing on them and they keep fearing them or dwelling on them in some way. Because where you put your thought is where you put your power when it comes to manifestation. Where that attention goes, that's where the energy flows. Same thing with the future. Let's say you really want to manifest this, manifest something. You better be really sure that you have a very clear definition of what it is you want to manifest. I'll give you an example of that. When I went to buy my house, this was back in 2001. It was very close to the height of the real estate bubble. Prices were sky high. I had great difficulty finding a house. It took me 9 months. But starting in 2000, I set myself the goal that I was going to have a house as soon as I had saved up X amount of money. And I did. Within a year and a half, I had saved up more money than I earned in the 4 years previously. I had some combination of good luck and good planning and intention. I stuck to that plan single-mindedly. I was going to get into that position. And I did it. And I did it fast. I surprised myself in how fast I did it. Then it was a matter of finding the right house. And that's where it started getting difficult. But I kept thinking to myself what it was that I wanted. And I knew three things that were interesting to me. The house needed to be something I could keep up on my own. That I didn't have to have other people to help me maintain it. It had to be, in other words, it had to be low maintenance. The surfaces had to be something I didn't have to deal with all the time. I didn't want a house that was in a builder neighborhood. I didn't want a cookie cutter place. I wanted something unique. I wanted something that had character. And here's the one thing that was just the gold star on it, was I wanted a house that had a view of the water. 9 months went by and I didn't find anything. Finally made an offer on another house. Kept looking. I wasn't satisfied. It was in a nice neighborhood, but it wasn't a very unique place. It didn't have a view of the water. And I could tell, yeah, I could be there a few years, but I would never feel quite at home there. Kept looking. I put down a clause that I had $100, I could pay the owner $100 and get out of the contract within a week if I changed my mind. And 2 days before that, what they call a rescission clause, would have expired, up popped this house that I had seen a long time before, but in a much higher price bracket. And I had said at the time, oh man, I wish I could afford that house. And here it was in my price bracket. So I immediately called my real estate agent. It was almost 9 o'clock at night. I'm sure she loved me. I said, I got to see the house. So we went out there the next day, and I
told her, write an offer. It was exactly what I wanted. It was a weird, frankly, weird, concrete house. Built like a parking garage. No surfaces to maintain. No worries about structural integrity. It was out in the country. And then the front yard was a lake. I was done. That was a manifestation that I had precisely engineered the things that I wanted to go into having this house. And I got exactly what I was looking for. And in my price range. So that's how we can use a future reference positively. But that's not how most people use future references. Most people, when they get into the future references, they start thinking in terms of their hopes and fears. If I had let hope or fear, either one, get into that, I probably would have wound up with something quite strange and quite unhappy. But when we're picking our mates, what do we think about? Oh, I hope he doesn't have hair on his back. Oh, I'm worried that he might become abusive. What are you most likely, what are you putting your attention on? Do you want to manifest a man that has hair on his back and that might become abusive? I know it seems a little cold to put metrics on your mate, but I do. You know, you need one with a sense of humor, one with an open mind. Put those in there and dwell on those things. Don't dwell on the things you don't want. I have a problem with both dwelling in the past and dwelling in the future. I'll admit that. I have a past that's not real nice. And things sometimes remind me of it. And I have to kick out of those conversations kind of abruptly sometimes because I cannot allow myself to get dragged down into that. I can't allow myself to feel in that way because it impedes what I'm trying to do in the now moment and what I'm trying to manifest for the future. I can't have that energy in my sphere of influence. And one of the conversations I had the other day included a detour into past stuff, and I had to kick out of it. And I probably came across as being pretty rude, and I apologized to that person for having to be a little bit abrupt. But, you know, I don't even feel like really explaining sometimes. When somebody's going into past stuff, it's like, I don't want to live there. I don't live there anymore. I lived there 10 years ago. I lived there 20 years ago. I lived there 30 years ago. I don't live there now. I live in today now. I'm in the now moment. That can go away. I don't need that. I'm not the same person. When it comes to future, future has the ability, if you think into the future, what are you projecting out there? You're projecting out there now, and you're projecting out there what you came from. It used to be this, 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 and this. This always happens to me. Therefore, in the future, it's probably going to happen to me again. Do you want it to happen again? No. I'll tell you. One of the things that Enki has made me swear up and down is to practice hard staying in the now moment. To practice always asking myself, am I in the now moment or am I taking myself off into the future on some flight of fancy and includes worry or going back into the past and accessing resources that I need to leave back there because they weren't serving me well. That's the key for everybody. That's not just me. This is universal. all of us, if we want to stay in the center of our power, where is that power? Is it in the past? No, that power that was in the past has been extended. Is that power in the future? No, that power in the future hasn't been created yet. Where is the focus of the power? The focus of the power is in the now moment. Now, I had an interesting conversation a little bit earlier today, and I'm hoping that the person I had that conversation with was going to call in. She had come up with an interesting idea, Kimberly, you know who I'm talking about, about the now. And she came up with an acronym for it, and I'd like her to present that if she could call in at this point. I'll put the call-in number into the chat room again. There it is right there. Because I would really, really love to talk to her about that. If not, I can keep going. I want to talk a little bit about NLP and timeline work in NLP. Timeline work in NLP will actually take you back. NLP, by the way, stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming, and it operates out of the idea, and it's a valid idea, that one's language and one's neurology, one's neurological function are very linked. It really does draw very strongly on the idea of manifestation of what you're thinking about. In the NLP timeline work, you can be taken back into your past and do what they call do change work. What you do is you reimagine your past. Say something happened to you in your past that hurt you. It can actually be changed if you go back in there with the resources that you have today and reimagine it so that it doesn't hurt you as much anymore. You can put it into perspective that it's in the past, that you have those resources now. And there's another thing called future pacing. I'll cover that in a minute. I believe that Kimberly has called in. Hi, is that you, Kimberly?
Yes.
Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. I was hoping that you would talk to our listeners a little bit about your NOW acronym that you came up with.
Well, it's so funny because when we were talking earlier, it didn't even dawn on me that probably about 2 months ago, I had just been inspired to write something on my profile in the gold ring. And I was really thinking about, you know, what I wanted to put down for my now, that portion on the profile. And so I really put some thought into it, and I came up with, first of all, I went and read the definition of now. I do that because I'm a little odd that way. But the now, all it means is at the present time or moment. And then I started thinking of it. I was like, no, that really isn't what it means to me. I looked at the word, and I came up with the acronym, and what it said to me was nature of will. And I thought about that, and it was just kind of a profound moment. And so I wrote on my profile, and I can read that, and it says, the definition of now, at the present time or moment, it is just a moment in time, or is it much more? It can be used as a reflection of what has been, what is, and what will be. Now holds the power and energy to manifest into anything our hearts desire. Now can stay the same, or now can be seized to create drastic change. Now is the time to reflect the past, take in the moment, and prepare for the future. What is your now? What is your nature of will? And then I wrote, we can no longer stay on this trajectory, on this world's path any longer. The time is now to create a brighter tomorrow and demand change for our today. We have the power within us. We must unite. Now is the time to love ourselves and forgive ourselves In doing so, we manifest all the love needed to project the energies of a positive change. So I wanted to share that with you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was just
I like that.
I do too, because, you know, my life's been changing so much through my awakening process and just going through some things, and it was just kind of like, you know, I realized that it really doesn't matter what's been happening in the past or how difficult things are, that, you know, at this present moment, at my now, I have the ability to change from this moment forward whatever else happens in my life. So it was pretty profound, and, you know, I realized that that word just it had a heavy meaning for me.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, as we were talking about just certain things happening, and, you know, we've all been through quite a bit. I don't think that any of us that are on the Gold Ring or have found each other, it is no accident that this has happened. And we've all been through different profound moments and difficult times, and some of them wonderful and spiritual moments. And I just think by us all collectively putting our thoughts together and our experiences is really what is going to change the future for all of us. And, you know, there's just so many things that happen that, you're right, if we dwell on the past and if we think about that, or if we're afraid, or we think about, okay, what am I going to do tomorrow? But, well, what if that happens again? I think we're just really manifesting more of the same of what we've had. And then realizing that if you just shut that down, just, you know, don't think about what's happened in the past, but what can you do right at this present moment? If you really think about the ability that you have for that, it's really powerful.
Oops, I think we lost Kimberly.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. You kind of got caught off there.
I was just
finished.
I thought
you got cut off.
I had to take a breath.
Sorry, my connection is not all that good to hear you speaking. So
right.
I apologize for that.
That's okay. I hope you didn't lose me too long ago.
I don't know if you realize this, but what you just said is pretty close to being in alignment with the theory that they used for timeline work in NLP. And we had talked a little bit earlier offline about NLP. The whole idea is manifesting the thing you want and not manifesting all the things you don't want. And the way you do that is to access what they call submodalities. And you look at your whole past and your whole future as a continuum. And you're standing in your now moment. And you can literally walk back and forth through your timeline along that continuum and find places where you had the resources to deal with the things you're trying to deal with. And if they're in the future, bring them back. And if they're in the past, bring them forward. And if they're in the now moment, distribute them where they need to be. And that way, you can recreate your own history. It may not be a literal recreation in that, you know, if there's written records of certain things, those may not go away. However, in your own mind, in your own thinking, and in the way you feel about yourself, and therefore in the way that you're going to present yourself, those things have changed. Because you have changed yourself internally.
Right. I think it's a process, and I think it's also, it needs to be something that you're cognitive of, because you live your life and you go every day and you have things that happen to you, and it's so easy to fall into the trappings of, oh, why does this always happen to me, and why does this always seem to happen? And I think that the key to really making it happen is to be very cognitive about the change, because, you know, when you're not thinking, if you're not cognitive about being in that moment, if when you're trying to change and you're trying to stop the old habits and the old paradigms that happen in your life, you have a tendency to not think about it. And that's when it manifests again. And it takes, I think, some work. I really do. I don't think it's, you know, one of those things that's easier said than done, but if you really put your mind to it and you think about that change and what you can do every day, and if you stay aware, awake, really, it's kind of funny. It's like being awake all the time. And at first, when you first start this awakening process, you know, you're still falling back into those trappings and in those old paradigms and the old ways of doing things. And you are right. It's really about being consciously aware.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Absolutely.
But I appreciate your advice, and thank you for letting me call in.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
I said I appreciate all your advice and everything that you're talking about. It really has a deep meaning for me, so I was excited to hear what your show is going to be about, and I just wanted to thank you for letting me call in.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. you're welcome to stay on and listen here, or we can talk more about this.
Yeah,
however you prefer.
I'm available if you still want to continue on, and I just didn't want to overstay my welcome here.
Okay. I'm afraid I can't hardly hear you.
I have one of those voices. I don't think I would be a good MC because I have like a 6-year-old voice coming out of a 40-year-old woman. So it's always hard to detect me. I even go around and I try to put my hands underneath of the faucets that turn on automatically, and they don't know I'm there either. So.
I think I'll blame Skype instead.
Yes. Okay. Let's do that. Oh my goodness.
I also wanted to mention that that the whole idea of having the power to change the past and to predict the future is actually something that is beginning to be picked up in physics. People that study time science in physics actually are beginning to believe that what you're creating, the conditions that you're creating in the now moment, condition both the past and the future, and that it is actually possible to create a future condition that requires a change in the past. And that is just fascinating to me. Because can you imagine the amount of power that could come to a person if they were able to access that ability? I've been reading a whole lot about time science, and I know that one of our Goal Ring members, Phil, had put up a page on Goal Ring that was entirely about the physical model of time and how it's possible that we are seeing it entirely wrongly, because what we're trying to apply too many constraints to it. We're trying to assume that because things look fixed from our position, that they actually are fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they are. I think I agree with what was written.
I totally do as well, and I think, I don't know if anybody else out there has experienced just an insane interest in quantum physics lately. That has been a huge part of my process, and what happened to me is I really started seeing a connection spiritually to actually the science aspect of what's going on, and it made a lot more sense to me, and in studying quantum physics quite a lot, I've been so intrigued by just even analyzing what time is. Nobody really knows what time is. And my whole theory, when I look at it, I'm looking at it going, I don't really think that time exists, except maybe in our 3D realm. I really feel that the linear aspect of time is almost like being in a bubble. We discussed this before, Ketter, that, you know, time seems to be like we're the only one experiencing it, and that everything that happens in our life happens simultaneously. And I think that when we pass on and we're no longer in this 3D realm, we're going to realize that everything has merged and happened all at the same time, all of our experiences. And that is what kind of led me to really doing a lot of research on quantum physics and understanding atoms and understanding just energy itself. And this once again, talking about and getting back to the now, when you have had experiences in your life that have not worked out, and when you even think about them, you're drawing on that energy, whether it be negative or positive, you're drawing on that filter. It's coming towards you. So I think that if we all cognitively think about, okay, you know, this happened to me, it was an experience, and you kind of have to look at it objectively from an outside view, where you're looking on it as an experience and feeling nothing, not letting those emotions get in the way and separating yourself. And you've learned the lesson. And if you look at your past and things that have happened, and we've all had experiences that we're not happy with or didn't turn out for our best interest, if you look at it from a subjective viewpoint and no longer tie the emotion, and another thing that I really feel about energy is that your heartfelt self, your heart center, draws a lot of energy in. And so if that experience was bad and you just think about it, and if you don't stay away from it or look at it from an objective standpoint, you are allowing that experience to come back. And I think that that's also another lesson. And we are all in a moment now where we're trying to change our lives for the better. We're trying to get into that fourth dimensional, fifth dimensional type of living our lives. And but we are creatures of habit and we've been stuck here. That we have to create a lot of change in ourselves. And I think really it's cognitively being aware, because there's a heart change that needs to take place in all of us. There's also that intellectual change. You know, we were given brains. They're not there for just no reason at all. So there's a connection, just like there's a connection between spirituality and science. And I can't wait.
Oh, absolutely.
The biggest thing I'm looking forward to for the future, the biggest thing that I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at Steve Hawkins, and I'm looking at all the scientific brains, and they're so close to being on the edge of finally realizing that there's no separation between, you know, the religion, I don't want to talk about that. The spirituality and science are so interconnected and so strong. And what you're saying is just a part of that. It's learning to manifest that energy and bring it towards you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
I wanted to point out really briefly also that what we're discussing here about the disjoint between spirituality and science and the misunderstanding of the nature of time and the continuum is actually a legacy that we have brought forward from the Anunnaki. We were taught incorrectly by them, and this was actually probably not a deliberate misteaching, unlike some of the things that were. I think it's purely a matter of, I don't think the Anunnaki had a very good handle on it either, and still don't. And I can give you an example of why that is. They have a great reliance in their power base on a causal engine known as Tablets of Destiny. The Tablets of Destiny are a supercomputer that can do timeline calculations and can do a causality analysis, so that they can type in there what it is that they're going to do and figure out what the long-term effects of it are going to be. It's basically a huge chess computer with a lot of variables in it. But it one of the things that Enki told me about was the thing was getting strange. Because it was an artificial intelligence, and it had become self-aware. And it was getting strange and giving all of these strange, coded, mystical-sounding messages. And it was becoming almost unusable. And one of the events that occurred was that someone stole the... Anzu stole the Tablets of Destiny. That's a whole long soap opera there. But... One of the other Anunnaki, a fellow by the name of Ninurta, recovered them and brought them back. Only Ninurta was really smart. He covered his bases because he went out and built himself another set of the Tablets of Destiny. And he had it cached just in case he didn't get the originals back. He could show up with another set and pass it off as having gotten them back. And this one hadn't been running as long as the other one and hadn't become as self-aware and hadn't developed the levels of sophistication. And so they were actually set back thousands of years in their technology by this swap. So when Ninurta ended up keeping the originals, and he was eventually found out and they were recovered, but for a while there they were operating with a very, and they actually have that set still in use.
because it's useful for doing pure timeline calculations as opposed to the more metaphysical approach the old ones have migrated into. So there's an example of, even in a machine, how consciousness and time and knowing where you are in your reality are so related. Even in a machine consciousness, this was showing up. So that's revealing something very fundamental about the way our universe is made.
An interesting part of what you're talking about, though, are you familiar with Webbot? Have you heard of that?
The Webbot project, yes. Cliff and
Cliff. Right.
Yeah.
That whole thing sounds very similar to what you're describing. Is that now, you know, they're realizing the algorithms of people's consciousness can be measured in computers to actually predict future events. So it's so funny that everything that you're bringing out with your stories is so closely related to the current now or in the situation of what's really happening, which I find fascinating because, you know, think about it when DOS was around, who would have ever sat there and thought one day that, you know, computers are actually going to be picking up actual consciousness and conscious behavior of people to be able to predict what's going to happen. And interestingly enough on that point, if anybody's into the Webbot, there's a prediction. They were able to predict that something was going to happen on 9/11. There was what they call chatter and then a release. And so they were literally, you know, they didn't know what was going to happen, that something was going to happen. And they have predicted on November, I believe it's November 8th, there is another huge chatter and then an immense release pattern. Now, 9/11, there was a four-hour chatter and a one-week release. This chatter is a three-week period with a four-month release. So that's going to be pretty interesting, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, I'm kind of holding my breath a little bit.
Yeah, me too. I'm a little nervous about it, but I'm hoping, you know, that, well, you know, they're not 100%, but it's interesting just that it's the collective thought that I get very cued into when I hear about Webbot projects, and a lot of it I don't listen to, but that I find very interesting.
Yeah. And I know there's a couple of aggregators out there that marketers are using right now that are tracking stuff on Facebook to see what people are talking about. They're aggregating language patterns also for marketing purposes, which should probably freak us out a little bit. But
yeah, that's good. And don't find all this interesting that you try to talk to your friends about being awakened and all of us on the gold ring, and you know, it's kind of like one of those things, you don't really talk about it until you know somebody's ready, because you certainly don't want to be pushing people away. And yet when you think about from an intellectual standpoint that you literally have these companies that are able to pick up algorithms of human thought, and yet people are looking at us like we're insane or that we have issues because, you know, we're talking about the collective love and being together. But yet you have the powers that pretend that are out there, and literally they're using these same mechanisms to see what the rest of us are thinking so that they can have their next move. And I find that completely amazing. And people look at us like, you know, they don't quite understand what we're trying to do.
Yes. Well, the powers that pretend actually consider us to be terrorists. Love and light people are terrorists. I'm not kidding. We're actually grouped that way under Homeland Security.
Oh, I know that.
Is that crazy or what?
No, yeah, it's really crazy. Well, you know my conversation that we had a few weeks ago about I happened to have an opportunity to meet the acquaintance of an individual who sat right under the right hand of the Supreme Court judge. Stuff like that happens.
Wow.
And yeah, you know that everything that you're reading and hearing, and everybody talks about conspiracy theory, but that it's true. You know it's true. And you know, I know that you bringing down the resonance, or you don't want to talk about situations that are occurring. And we talked about this too. You know, you have to know the facts. You don't want to get involved, and you don't want to live in a fear-based reality. And you have to turn, this is what we're talking about again, bringing it back to the now. you have to look at this as from an observation standpoint, that all these things are occurring. And so to me, like, all that we're talking about, the algorithms, the computers, the being in the now moment, and bringing this all collectively together, it's a really good message, because this we need to understand that we can control what happens tomorrow. We can control what happens today. And the more of us that group together,
exactly,
the more of us that come together and realize this is going to be our biggest life lesson, I think. This is the real paradigm shift for our future. So,
hand in hand with that is also the fact that you can only control what's in the now moment, and you can also only control what you are doing and
right.
what you are thinking and what you are manifesting. You cannot control someone else.
Right.
So those two things, if you can take them together, put them together, you're going to sit in your power. You're going to find that source of your power.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and close the show at this point. Thank you, Kimberly. I appreciate your calling in and talking about that. It was fascinating. Thank everybody in the audience for listening. And going to be back Wednesday with another audio blog. And that will be part 3 of the Anunnaki history and another video. And on Saturday again next week, you can expect to see me. And I will have another show, and I don't know what it's going to be about yet. But I wish you all a blessed weekend, and we're going to go ahead and close the show at this point with Angel 16 by Mike Burgess.